Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Simcast. I nearly forgot the name of the show. That's a really promising start. This is show number 14. Last week's show we're calling Apollo 13 because I think it was held together by duct tape and polystyrene boxes.
That's generous.
Sorry to Ben and Lewis who had to jump in and did a very good job covering our show because it was meant to be our show, but it couldn't be our show because our show went missing.
I think we did a really good show. It's just the problem is that no one's ever going to hear it other than us.
It was so mind-bendingly good that the internet simply wasn't ready to hear our brilliance.
Absolutely not. No, not ready for that.
No. I'm Matt Hunter. Alongside me, as usual, on the other side of the coast is Mr. Jordan Groves.
Hello.
And this is show number 14, as I said. Of course, if you want to get in touch with us, please do at Simcast Radio. Using the hashtag SimcastRSL or on the radio show listeners collective on the Book of Face. I'm going to start with one thing really quick before we introduce our amazing guests, because we have not one but two brilliant guests this week. And we have product announcements that have actually happened within the time scale of the show, which is quite something.
That is a rare feat. It's usually the minute we finish.
It's two product launches and a game. This is, I think people are starting to pay attention to us and they realise they actually have to do things before we air.
Well, if they've announced everything on time, what are we going to get later this evening once we've stopped? Like, we're going to get like the world's best sim racing announcement. I don't know what it would be.
iRacing Season 3. 2021 Season 3 or something. Oh,
yeah, they'll announce it like 6 weeks early just to spite us.
Anyway, one big announcement that we won't be quite we sort of can cover because it kind of part of it is already done and dusted, is the British GT Esports Championship finale this weekend at Donington Park. We have two of the title protagonists, of one's already the champion, but you know. And one of them is a very good friend of Tora, and a friend of this show, who I've just insulted by pointing out that he hasn't won the title.
Is used very loosely.
I've done this really well. Mr. Angus Fender is back.
Good evening, everyone.
And we are also joined by the 2021 British GT Esports Championship champion, James Baldwin. Hello, James.
Hello. How we doing?
Not too bad. Great to have you guys on. Well, should we jump straight in? British GT Esports Championship for this year. Very different. New title. New cars. More recognisable cars in terms of, obviously, what you are both used to. James, let's talk about wrapping the title up with a season to go. How's it been? A race to go, rather.
Good little series, to be fair. I think, was it the first season they did it? Was it their first champ? I think it was. Or maybe I missed the first one. This was the second one, I don't know. But it was a good championship. And, the races were definitely interesting. The first race was very interesting with me and Angus. Lots of argy-bargy and some good racing, to be fair. But, if they do another one, we'd love to take part, but we'll see.
Well, let's talk about, obviously, you know, GT3 was the preserve of the real world drivers. I know how much prep normally goes in when you guys like to take these things seriously, but how do you think the spread was across the rest of your competition, and how much prep were you able to get in before, because the calendar was quite compact, of course.
Yeah, I think, let's not lie. I think the field spread was fairly big from the back to the front, but I think there was a group of five or six at the front were that were fairly close. I mean, Michael O'Brien, Angus, myself, Alex Buncombe, Jensen in the first round was there on quali pace. So I think, yeah, it was very interesting, especially Brands Hatch. I think Brands Hatch was probably the race of the year so far, because it was like four or five of us going for the win. And the GT4s, obviously, they're all driven by the sim guys, and they were very close. But it definitely added an extra dynamic into it.
And of course, I mean, the question that everyone, I think, probably asks, you know, you are driving virtually your car from the real series on what a lot of people are saying are the best iterations of the circuits in the UK. How are the comparisons? Obviously, we can't physically compare how they are, but in terms of visualizing the track and how the cars react on circuit, how are you finding that in comparison to real life?
Well, I mean, as you say, the nearest things you can get to reality, laser scanned. I mean, I used them to prep for last year's British GT series in real life, and I think it helped. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't sweat like I would for an F1 esports series or anything. I wasn't putting 8 hours a day in. I'd hop on, you know, Friday, Saturday, and I needed to, because the front five guys were quick. So if I didn't prep at all, I would have got my ass handed to me, as they say. But yeah, it was good. It was good.
And Angus, back in the Century BMW for the esports championship. How was it for you? Obviously, Alton Park went particularly well.
Yeah, I mean, that was good, only because I could completely monster the curb, which was quite funny to watch back. but I mean, I kind of just wanted to do something different. I didn't realise there'd be three BMWs. Honestly, I thought I'd be the only one. So I just thought, oh, go on, then I'll do something a bit out there. I don't want to have everyone in the McLaren, because it was either that or, obviously, the 2022 C's McLaren. But no, went with the BMW. Alton was cool. I think it was ultra close to the front, but that round unfortunately didn't show the best driving standards as a whole through the field. There were quite a lot of GT4 and GT3 cars ending up in the barrier. But since then, the driving standards got better every time, and for my first real dabble into esports, it's been good fun, and I've learned a lot, and yeah, it's a new experience, and I've enjoyed it.
And obviously, with one round left to go at Donington Park, now the GT3 title wrapped up last time out. What, Angus? What's your kind of feelings ahead of Donington Park? Good circuit for the BMW.
Well, it's a good circuit in general. Donington in any car is fantastic. I'm in the fortunate position of actually knowing what the M6 feels like around there in person, and as you remember, I got third there at the end of 2019 season with Jack Mitchell. But no, I'm looking forward to hopefully finishing this season strong. I'm sure the driving standards and the pace from the other guys will be just as good. But I know the BMW's pretty handy around that track. So I'm going to be aiming for the front, obviously, as I have been with all the rest of the races.
Angus, you mentioned a second ago about how you've obviously, both of you guys have an idea of how the cars feel in real life. This might be a bit of a basic question, but when it comes to Assetto Corsa Competizione in particular, where does the sim replicate reality the best, and where is it lacking still? Because we get a lot of people say, I believe you mentioned earlier, James, how you use it to get your reference points in and, you know, get warmed up for a track and something like that. What's holding the sims back from being even more accurate?
I think one of the really good things that Assetto Corsa Competizione does is I think it has the best tyre model of any GT sim. You drive other sims, iRacing, R-Factor, and it all feels a little bit too delicate, like the car's kind of floating on top of the track, and you drive ACC and the car feels like it's digging into the track surface like it would do in real life. When it comes to things that are holding it back, I think some curb physics still need a bit of work, but obviously they aren't things that could be changed really difficultly. They're quite easy fixes, but there's things happening all the time, and it's by far and away the closest one I've found so far to the real thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, if you wanted it to get closer to real life, then they would just have to look at each car every track and just get more and more in depth and specific as to what it feels like when you do, you know, when you brake, when you turn in, because it is close, but it's not bang on. But from I can see from ACC's point of view, or Qnos, why spend the effort and the time and the money doing that when it's already pretty close? And you know, for the majority of people that buy the game, they can get an idea of what it feels like to drive a GT3 car.
And James, you flick around from different titles all the time. Like you mentioned, like one sometimes you'll be practicing for F1 Esports, you're then on the British GT games, and you both mentioned about how the tyre model from iRacing compared to Assetto Corsa Competizione can be massively different. How difficult is it, James, to switch from each of these games? Because they're all aiming to do the same thing, simulate racing, but they all do it in slightly different ways. Is it difficult to not only switch from them, but then to be quick and at the top in each of those sims?
Yeah, it's difficult. It takes a lot of grind, a lot of work. And, you know, I try and not do two comps or two competitions at the same time on different games because it can mess you up quite a lot. I think with ACC, though, because it's probably the closest to reality, it's the easiest to jump onto because you're doing natural things as you would when you drive. If you compare that to going on F1, it's like, I'm not going to say Mario Kart, but it's not far away. It feels a bit weird. The physics are very weird. So you're not really driving off instinct, you're driving off memory as you know, thinking of how you're going to get the most out of the physics, which is not a natural thing to do. But if you put the time in, I think most people will get it. It's just some people don't want to put the time into it.
Yeah, I've spoken to a couple of F1 esports drivers, and they say that F1 in particular is one of the sim titles where you have to learn how to be fast. There aren't really many different ways of achieving the same lap time. There's sort of a set way to be fast. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it in 5 months, but it's really weird. It's like building a subconscious muscle memory. There are little quirks you have to do to be fast. Like, I know in most cars in real life, you rotate the car with the throttle in mid corner, but on that game, it's taken to another level. You're just balancing the car with the throttle. But the thing is with the F1 game, you can't really feel the road underneath you. Whereas on most other games like iRacing and ACC and stuff, you can. So it's guesswork, but the more you play it, the more your muscle memory gets kind of in tune with that weird physics. And yeah, it just comes really.
So we actually have, I'm going to say for the first time this year, questions from the floor, if you like. Pedantic Squirrel on Twitter has put forward a couple of questions. Actually, one of them kind of builds on what we've just been talking about. Has gaining pace on one particular game helped the most with not only other games but also with your real racing exploits?
Probably not. I mean, I suppose it helps you adapt. You know, it gets you in that rhythm of adapting from one game to another. And as Angus knows, in real life, you have to adapt to all the different scenarios thrown your way. If it starts raining, if it stops raining, whatever. I wouldn't say it directly helps my real life stuff going from game to game, but it's definitely a good skill or trait to have, because if you can go from game to game, you can enter one or two or three competitions and then, you know, compete for more money, compete for more championships, and that's kind of the goal, really. So, yeah.
Angus?
Yeah, to a lesser or greater extent, I kind of mirror what James said. I think it's useful to build references and build your foundations, but when it comes to adding detail and proper intuitive driving detail into what you do, I think the real world stuff will always offer more to learn in terms of a simulator. So it's great to keep you ticking over through the off season and different situations like lockdown, but there's nothing that comes close to being out in a real car.
Yep. Correct.
Angus, you've been on the show you're probably our most recurring guest in like as the Simcast and our previous guys as Toro Radio Show. Forgive me, I don't remember whether we've actually spoken about how you got into motorsport. Yeah, would you consider your rise up to British GT as sort of like the standard in terms of, you know, starting off in karting, etc., and working up through the ranks that way?
Firstly, no worries, no grudges held, because I can't remember if we've spoken about it either. But my path to British GT was all about fast tracking, because as I'm sure James will can relate to, money's a thing and is a finite resource, so you have to use it as wisely as you can. So I got to my standard in karting. I came second in British Champs in 2016, then went straight to cars. 1 year in GT5, 1 year in GT4 Super Cup, and then straight to British GT. I've been kept on my toes, definitely. I've never really had the chance to settle into any specific car. Even in 2019, I changed car mid-season in that, from the M4 to the M6. But, we've definitely had less time to focus on getting success in one thing, and it's more about making the most of the time we have.
And then by contrast, James, I think it's fair to say that your route to competing in British GT last season was a little bit out of the ordinary with your sort of diversion to sim racing. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got to sim racing, and then how that then led into, you know, World's Fastest Gamer, and then the position where you were last year competing in British GT?
Well, I mean, I had a Soto Corsa. I mean, what more prep do you need?
Exactly. That's the right answer.
I won a few sim competitions in 2019, then got World's Fastest Gamer. They gave me an invite, won that, got the prize, the $1 million ride, because it was quite an Americanized series. Mm. And then had the Paul Ricard test in the GT3. So after winning World's Fastest Gamer, I needed a license, and to get the license, you have to get signatures. So I did a couple of races in a C1 at Brands, Anglesey, a GT4 that was kind of it was restricted in the sense it had really, really bad tyres, detuned engine. So that gave me the first real taste of what it was like to drive a GT car. And I drove that at Brands and Anglesey once. And that was a bit of an eye opener. And then after that, I had the whole winter off. Then COVID hit. And then, the Paul Ricard test came in the GT3. That was the big step up. Like, luckily, I did it on a track that was so big and had loads of runoff. So even if I did get it wrong, it wasn't going to cause a lot of damage. That was a pretty scary day. But once that day kind of happened, COVID hit the week after. And then the next time I was in the car was Friday at Alton Park, British GT, round one. So... but yeah, I don't know why it didn't feel like Paul Ricard felt like a big step, but Alton Park didn't. It felt like maybe I put so much sim work into it. Maybe I was just in a rhythm. I don't know, but yeah.
And we get this a lot with there's so many similarities in terms of like the visuals of the inputs rather between sim racing and real racing. You know, you have a steering wheel, etc. It's much more than that, obviously. How did you find the transition from going from the sim to the racing car? You said how scary that first day on Paul Ricard was. Like, how was that transition for you?
It was scary before, like the morning of. You know, the team around me looked pretty nervous. Like, there was quite a few media people around, like gamer going in a car for the first time. Oh my god! Oh my god! Everyone's flapping, and I'm like, should I be worried? The first few laps, though, like, I think and again, Angus will understand, like, you just need to build it up slowly, like slower than you think you need to, because if you go out there and do what you think's right, it's probably going to be too much too soon, and you will spin, you will go off. So I just took it super, super slowly. But saying that, even though I did that, within the third lap, I was doing the same times as... Chris Buncombe, who was out before me. Not saying he was pushing and on the limit, but you know, I was there or thereabouts even when I was kind of taking it easy. So at that point, I just, you know, you get confidence, you think, oh, maybe it's not as hard as I thought. It is kind of like the sim, you do everything pretty much the same. Obviously, the more you do it, the better you get. So
And prior to your sim racing and everything, I believe you did race karts for a little bit, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, I was a little bit. From when I was 8 years old to when I was 15. But it wasn't at the level Angus was karting. It was more corporate stuff, really. But still give me a good foundation, you know, of, I suppose, speed and all that stuff. What it feels like to have a crash.
Yeah, the important things. So would you say the transition to sim racing, was that more because you guys have both mentioned funds being a thing, and boy, it is in the world of motorsport. Was sim racing your kind of substitute for the sad inability to be able to do it because of the funds in real life? Or
completely? Yeah. After 2 years out of karting, I saw you could do it online with a rig, you know, do the same things. You could steer a wheel, you could brake and use your foot for the throttle and stuff like that. And I thought, well, just give it a go. It's probably going to be some good fun, play with some mates online, just nothing serious. You know, I didn't intend for it to become a job or anything like that at all. That wasn't even on my radar, to be honest. So Project Cars won and I was away, really.
Excellent.
I vaguely remember that being a good game, just not on consoles.
Totally.
I don't know. I mean, I had it on Xbox and I thought it was awesome. But, I mean, you're right. You look back now and it looks pretty bad.
I think it was the online element, because we made this, in hindsight, not very clever decision of trying to host the opening round of the British GT Championship, I think, 2 weekends after the game had launched. And that was...
That didn't go great.
I regret, yeah, but come on, 6 years down the line, I regret nothing.
Wow, is that how long it's been?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I remember that like it was yesterday. Wow.
But yes, British, us and British GT, we go way back. James, I can't not ask the question. Jenson Button.
What's he? Yeah.
Nice bloke to work with.
Lovely bloke. Yeah, and I'm, you know, it'd be very easy for me to just say that, wouldn't it? But
can't really say no.
Yeah, I can't say that. No, of course, yeah, he is really nice. When I first kind of met him on the Friday of Silverstone, the final round of British GT, I mean, understandably quite reserved and quiet around myself and Michael, but as the weekend, as we got into it and the more, you know, debriefs and looking through video and data and stuff like that. Yeah. Really, really nice guy. And I've spoke to him a few times online, did a few sim races with him and stuff. And yeah. Lovely bloke.
I was saying, cause obviously he did the opening weekend of the British GT Esports Championship. How much sort of back and forth feedback was there between you with that? Cause I'm guessing, you know, with the best of intentions, Jensen doesn't have as big a background in sim racing. Was there, you know, were you able to sort of, was he asking for advice? Was he trying to learn off of you prior to that event?
I mean, to be honest, we did exchange a conversation or two, just talking about a few corners and any bits on the setup I could help him with. You know, he'd struggle with a lot of understeer, so I tried to help him with that. And I think Jensen is actually, out of all the real drivers out there, he's rapid on a sim. He's got good equipment, he's got a direct drive and all that stuff, but he's really quick when he puts the hours in. But I know his British GT debut in the finale of Silverstone didn't go too well, because I think they had a few car issues. But even I saw how good he was, because on the Sunday in the warm-up, I don't know if Angus remembers, but it was quite damp. And we all know that Jensen in those conditions was like, he was a beast back in F1.
Yeah.
And even with the car issues he was nursing, I was behind him and we did two or three laps in the warm up. And I thought, right, I don't know why, but I went balls to the wall in the warm up. And I thought I'd nailed a lap. And he was like only a tenth off. And I was like, fair play. Like, he's got some car issues and he's doing that. Like, that's pretty impressive. And there were certain things in the damp conditions he was doing as well to warm up the tyres and stuff, which I took on board. But yeah,
I wouldn't remember that because I broke down.
Well, the warm up.
Yeah, out lap. Car's like, no, I'm gonna go to sleep now.
Oh dear.
I'm just gutted. I still can't go to anything. It's getting a bit silly now. 2 whole years. I've not been in a racing circuit, but. And Silverstone, I have to admit, Silverstone's the one I like to go to the most, primarily because it's a longer race. I can't remember, they didn't have the. Because they used to have the European GT4 guys come over. They didn't do that this year, did they? Last year, did they? I don't think.
They didn't do that for 2019 either. There was a little bit of an overlap at Spa in 2019, but not really.
Are they letting fans in for round one?
I think they are. I think so. Limited number as per last year, but I think they are letting some fans in.
Well, I mean, do you remember that? Like, they said limited, but there was loads of people there.
Actually loads.
It's limited in inverted commas.
We all know why. That's because that's because Stefan Rattel, in his infinite wisdoms, they're thinking limited. If I limit it to like one person less than what we had before, then it's limited 10.
Yeah, you've still taken action at that point, so exactly. You're conscious of it. Yeah.
Well, Stefan Rattel, a slight aside, we do these from time to time in the show, guys. Was competing in the GT2 championship at Monza last weekend. How cool was that? I don't know if you guys.
Well, he was driving.
Yeah,
I saw that in a KTM, wasn't it? In the GT2 thing.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Although, could you imagine if you took someone out and got called to the clerk's office? If you give me a penalty, you're losing your job.
But you had Hans Stuck out there as well in a KTM, and I was sort of thinking, who's going to be the person who is dumb enough to try and hit Hans Stuck? But because actually, I mean, obviously, you guys have had quite a bit of experience with GT3s. The GT2s, I think, were announced what two? Everything's but the last 12 months doesn't exist to me. So
I think it was a year and a half ago ish.
Something like that. Yeah. What do you guys make of them? Do you think it's an interesting category for development? Because I know the argument for GT3 originally was starting to get too expensive and all this, that and the other, and GT4 was going to be the next big thing and all this. But now GT2's come along and there seems to be some good manufacturer backing appearing in that now.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the announcement. I haven't really looked too much into it, but yeah, I mean, in terms of as a driver, you can't really be too fussy. So, you know, GT4, GT3, GT2, anything, you know, you'd love to do it. You'd love to drive it, give it a try. But yeah, I haven't really looked too much into it.
Yeah, in terms of series regs, I'm a little bit. I'm still to be won over by it, really, because you have so many different types of car, like ethoses in the field. Like, you have Super Trofeo Lambos, Ferrari Challenge 488s, Porsche GT2s, obviously the KTMs. There's just a lot of different stuff, and I can't help but think there'll be one dominant car for the year. And it just needs a little bit more time to flesh out, really, and just give brands a bit more time to develop their own cars. I've nothing wrong with an AM-friendly series, but yeah, I'm still to be convinced because there was a huge field spread at Monza.
I mean, I honestly thought in the run up to it that the Audi was going to be the runaway car, but it did seem from the bit of footage I watched that the KTM was the sort of main protagonist there. I think there was a Ferrari there, but it was either way down the field or didn't do extreme run. The Lambos didn't even start.
I saw that, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I was expecting the Audi to be the runaway favourite and not the case. Not the case at all.
I'm just looking forward to seeing those, hopefully seeing the GT2s appearing. It's of course a competizione sometime soon.
Could you imagine that? That'd be nice. Although, I believe when they announced GT2 in the first place, it was going to race at the same time as a class on its own with the GT3s. I can't see that happening. I think that's a bit optimistic to completely annoy the hell out of every pro GT3 driver who gets just left for dead down the straights by an amateur GT2 car. I just think that's going to cause chaos, don't you?
It was a little bit like the GTCs at Silverstone.
Oh, exactly. They drive me crazy.
Yeah, they were crazy. They were worse than the GT4 in the corners, but arguably a bit slipperier and quicker on the straights than the GT3.
Well, and they were out in our quality session as well. Faster than us in a straight line.
How much?
The The 488 Challenge was 13 miles an hour faster than me in a straight line, but that's because my car was right down the bottom of the speed traps. Yeah, which was an interesting race trying to pass those cars.
It's like when you see, I can't remember where it was. I think it might have been Le Mans, actually. And the way the LMP1s and the LMP... Hang on, I've got to get this right in my head. The LMP1 hybrids and the LMP1 non-hybrids, the way they, obviously the power delivery is, was meant that they were just kind of like not really... Obviously the hybrids were, I'm going to say something rude then, disappearing off into the distance on the straight lines, but as soon as they got near corners again, it was kind of like, well, anybody's game.
Yeah, there was a bit of yo-yoing, wasn't there?
Mm. But it's in a way, it's good to see, because it kind of shows that in that respect, you have the balance, it's just on a circuit with straights that long, up to a point that the, you know, then obviously the hybrids hit their sort of their VMAX, and that's it, and then the rest of them sort of caught up. I do love all this. I love BOP. I love all this sort of stuff. This is 13 years of being a boring old fart, I can tell you.
That's just because you haven't tried to drive with it.
No.
I was going to say, it's all well for us as spectators. Yeah. I imagine it is the bane of the existence for racing drivers.
There was a point where I could fit in the car. I'm not entirely convinced that would be the case now, sadly.
with enough butter, anything's possible. I'm sure you'd be all right.
Oh, God, that's not
too much of it. Let's move on
from that. Moving on.
Sorry for
talk about something else.
I feel sorry for the driver change after me, but if that's the case.
Oh, I can't believe it's not butter.
Smells like toast in here. What's going on?
Hearing me.
Right, seems we've got two sim racers here as well. I think we should probably talk about, because we can
sim racing?
As we alluded to at the top of the show, two big product announcements that actually I think will be of quite interest to most people who listen to this show, and if not, stick with us. We'll talk about something else in a bit. Opinions and thoughts, of course, at Simcast Radio.
At Simcast Radio.
Hashtag Simcast RSL on the Twitter, and also the Radio Show Listeners Collective on Facebook. Goodness me. Right. Which should we do? I know which one he's going to want to do first. Should we do this in chronological order? Because then Jordan can make a... Oh, no, I'm not going to say that.
No, don't say that. I know what you were going to say. Don't say that.
Yeah, the Randy Marsh image. South Park reference for a little bit. Thrustmaster wheel, Jordan.
Yes, Thrustmaster have revealed what we basically all knew was coming anyway. The open wheel that they have been teasing since, I think, about December is indeed a replica of the 2020 Ferrari SF1000 Formula One wheel. I would say it's out now, but it was out now, and now it's not out now. Do you understand? So essentially, what they have done, as it's the SF1000, is on Tuesday, they released 1,000 of these wheels. I bet you can't see where this goes wrong, can you? And yeah, if you're not one of the people lucky enough to get one of the first 1,000, you have to wait until the end of August for when it is revealed, when it is unveiled worldwide. So, oh yes, and this was also only for Europe. So if you're Europe and the United Kingdom. So yeah, we have to specify that now.
We haven't had to say before.
So yes, as you can imagine, having a very limited product run for something that has been severely hyped up since January, with this date known since January, the website broke. Politest way of putting it. So yeah, there were very many difficulties for people like me trying to get a hold of the wheel. But as for the wheel itself, Matt, I think you will agree, and obviously James and Angus, if you've seen the wheel, feel free to jump in as well. It looks pretty nice. It's as we said, it's a replica of the F1 2020 wheel. It's got a nice LCD screen. You can cycle through various HUDs, and I believe they will also link directly into the next F1 game as well, which will be quite interesting. All made of carbon fiber. I believe the display can have up to 69 pieces of information, clutch paddles, the works, basically. So it is a very good looking product, and I'm sure it will be good when anybody can get their hands on it.
Yeah, it's great, doesn't it? Looks fantastic. Mm. And what's nice to see from Thrustmaster is that they've paid proper attention to detail in terms of what was probably the most disappointing thing about the last F1 attempt to wheel is that not all the buttons did things.
Mm.
And now all the rotary encoders, all the buttons, all the switches, they actually work and they have a mappable function that you can use, which is fantastic to see a company like Thrustmaster upping their game, because the sim community needs it, frankly.
I do have one question, though, because you are correct, they all do have functioning buttons. And a lot of people on social media are obviously focusing on the, the drink button, what's that going to do? My concern, and this might just be my sordid mind, is what do you want the oil button to do particularly?
Well, that might help out with our previous issue getting you in the car.
So
it's to help with drive changes. Just dump some oil.
Lubrication on demand.
There you go. It's what you need. Thrustmaster wheel brought to you. But no, anyway, that's a sponsorship. We're not
that was going
into
a weird direction, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, it was.
Yeah.
A bit, yeah.
So, yes.
You're right on board. I like it. It's great.
So, as we said, sadly, if you weren't one of the people who managed to get hold of one of the first 1,000, yeah, it's August 26th that the wheel will release worldwide. And it's retailing at $329.99, which. I had a horrible thought that it was going to be a lot more than that.
That's good.
Considering that's really good. Everything on this wheel. So I think that's a half decent price there.
Jordan, question is, did you actually get one in the end?
I believe I have.
What do you mean you believe you have?
It's a complicated story.
for another day?
Basically, I believe, you know how you get with these things where if you have a very limited run of products, almost inevitably, people buy a load of them and resell them.
Yeah.
I found a company that I shall not name, quite a reputable technology company in this country. They do all sorts of computer parts and components and stuff like that. They're a legit thing. I believe what they have done is they have bought a couple of these and raised the price by about £5. So if that is legit and I do get it when they say, which should be next week, then I have one. So tune into the next episode of the Simcast where we will see whether I actually get this wheel, whether I get a picture of it.
Yeah.
Or the last one from 2011. I'll get that one instead.
What I will say is the other sim announcement you're going to make may render this a bit useless.
Possibly.
Just saying.
What I will say about this wheel, bearing in mind the price point, £329, off the top of my head, that is significantly cheaper than even the limited edition F1 wheel from Fanatec, which I have to begrudgingly admit isn't quite as visually good as that.
True.
Which makes me very cross, because I have one. It's like James May being told that his Ferrari is out of date and rubbish. But yeah.
I guess the bet now is how long it takes for Fanatec to bring out a wheel rim with the screen and everything I would be surprised if it wasn't by the end of the year.
Well, given the fact that the F1 limited edition usually comes out, what, May, June time, give or take? Probably not that long. No, I'm not getting it.
What about Logitech? You know, I've heard rumours for years that they were bringing out a direct drive. And I thought what Fanatec were going to do, with their recent release, I thought Logitech were going to do that. You know, an entry-level DD.
But I think they missed the boat on that. It's a bit of a gap in the market, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
When you think about it. It's a bit of a niche, and it's nice to see a kind of crossover, which should, give direct drive wheels a bit more accessibility.
I mean, it's a direct drive you can clamp on your desk. It's like, what? Kind of just weird
bends,
to think, really.
Bends the desk in half.
Yeah.
I know my desk wouldn't stand up for that. That's why I'm glad I got the rig now, because there is no hope. I would.
It'll be awesome for half an hour, and then you'll need a new desk.
I don't think many racing drivers have to cope with possible splinters, you know, unless you're driving a Morgan. So
I got a splinter from the wheel of my Classic the other day.
Really?
Mid-drive, yeah. old TR3A. I was driving it to the local pub, of course I was. And then, splinters occurred and I need a new steering wheel.
So you don't wear gloves? Well, that's what
too nice weather for that, mate.
That's what you get.
Out of Southern Surrey,
yeah. Yeah. I guess it's certainly right, really. Sorry, shall I get some 70s leather, proper leather driving gloves just to wear in my classic TR?
Use the racing gloves. You won't look at all out of place, I'm sure. Definitely wear the overalls as well. You don't want to get splinters anywhere.
Oh,
so,
God, just...
You know what, to wear a hazmat suit, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah, you get in the car in a Zorb? You don't even need a car. Just Zorb everywhere.
There's a huge issue in this somewhere.
Consumer advice from the Simcast. Don't get a car, get a Zorb.
You're redefining travel.
And it's clean. It's clean, green.
It would solve any potential fuel crisis and all this carbon neutral rubbish, wouldn't it?
Still have to deal with punctures, though. So, you know.
I don't think there is that. Would be very good in Zorbs, though.
I don't know. I'd watch that.
BTCC would.
Less contact.
That'd be epic down Paddock Hill. Anyway.
I'd watch that.
God. Anyway. Isn't it interesting? I wasn't the one who came up with that tangent.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, well, you know, you said you weren't feeling very well. I had to pick up the slack.
Not. It's true. I'm very much not. Let's talk about the other bit of news then, because this, it didn't come out of the blue, did it? Because I think all four of us here had seen this coming, albeit in a very tongue-in-cheek kind of way not that long ago. Fanatec have released the CSL DD, a £350 direct drive wheel. Is that not a game changer?
It is. It definitely is. I looked at the specs and it's quite low on the torque. You know, it's only 5 Nm. And I think you can get an additional 3. But I mean, it's entry level. If you're having it on your desk, what do you want? You know, I think that's kind of perfect, really. It looks really nice, really compact. It's like a cute little base, isn't it? It's quite cute.
What I have noticed is that I think they've all kind of mugged us off a little bit here, because if you remember April 1st, they did a tweet saying, oh, we're releasing a DD 0.5 and it's half the size.
And everyone's like, yeah,
is that
right.
Not kind of what they've just
done? Yeah, so... yeah. Yeah, do you remember SimCube did the opposite? They did like a 2 meter long base as their April Fools.
Yeah, SimCube with the SimCube giant. Yeah.
Boat sim, yeah.
Nuts. SimuCube G-Wagon.
Excellent. I absolutely need to see that. So did I read it right? 8 Nm, did you say?
Yeah, 8 Nm.
Yeah,
up to 8.
Yeah, you can purchase an additional 3 on the 5. So it's not, I think it's like an add-on.
A boost kit.
So yeah. By comparison, a Thrustmaster T500, for example, is about 4.4 Nm. So it's about double of that. I don't know what the DD1 output is. That's 15.
That's 15 holding to 20 peak. I know because I have it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So that's it's not anything to be sniffed at, but yeah, it's. I think you're right. It's the perfect amount for sort of entry level, and for that price, and as you said, the compactness of it. Yeah, I think having an entry level for direct drive and not, you know, having to jump right in at the deep end, having something that comes off of an industrial conveyor belt, that's pretty good. That is really
interesting. Yeah, I mean, providing there's no issues, you know,
which is always the caveat.
Yeah, exactly. I think it could be a case of, you know, give it 2-3 years, that wheel will be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be. I don't know why, like, I saw it, and me and my mate were talking about it, and we said, you know, I bet Thrustmaster at their HQ saw that announcement and went, oh, bugger. Because you got to think, you know, why would you get a TSPC racer, which is more than that, when you can get a DD for under £400?
I've got to say, as someone who owns the exact wheel that you just mentioned,
yeah, but
I am glad that I bought this wheel 2 years ago and not a couple of months ago, because if I had just bought this wheel and then they had released that, I would be rather pissed right now.
Someone out there's done it. You know, it's put it 2 years ago. You were ahead of the curve, I think.
Yeah, like, I was lucky. I kind of got burnt in the same way with my VR headset because I think you might have done the same, Matt. I got the Oculus Rift S, and then about a month later, they released a new headset and announced that they weren't going to be supporting the old one anymore. So yeah, I would say if you're Thrustmaster, you're now thinking, oh well, this might hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think another point is introduction of this. What does it do for the clubs for wheelbase V2.5? Does it render it useless, or is there still a gap in the market for it? Really, it's more expensive and less peak torque. So, how's that going to fit in? How's that going to affect sales? Maybe.
Well, I suppose from their point of view, does it really matter? As you know, what product they're selling, as long as they're getting the money.
Yes, all money coming in just through different avenues, isn't it? Yeah.
But you're right, it is kind of pointless. And the CSL Elite as well, because, you know, I think that retails at about 300 as well. Why would you get that when you can get a DD for 50 more pounds? So, Fanatec have played a blinder, I think.
I think it also plays in, because I think there was a rumour going around, might not be official, but I've seen it on various chat groups, that Fanatec were planning on releasing a bunch of more affordable peripherals and wheels and that sort of thing to coincide with the PS5 in particular. So maybe this is also the start of that, because being able to have a direct drive, well, in fact, probably would be the first direct drive wheel that works with console, I think, unless one of the DDs works with PS4.
Yeah, mine works with Xbox.
Ah, okay.
But it's a little bit arm breaky.
Arm breaking. That's your official review. That's going to go on.
I could do whatever I want with the force feedback settings. It absolutely destroys my arms every time I try it. You let go of the wheel for a second, and it launches itself through the nearby window.
Nice.
Your neighbours must love you.
Oh, I'm a flatmate, so you find it hilarious.
There's Angus again.
Yeah,
flying out the window with his wheelbase.
Walks downstairs, spaghetti arms. What's going on?
I mean, I'm sure you've seen around the interwebs, probably around a year ago, some guy who was on his sim. The force feedback made his sim roll over.
Oh, was that the Jordan what? Taylor?
Yeah,
I think I saw, so. Yeah, so
Jordan Taylor at Monza Madness. Yeah, his entire rig fell over.
Yeah, so picture that, and then picture falling out of a window. That's what happens to me on Xbox.
It's just realism. Yeah. It's finally a way of incorporating the G forces of having a crash. Smacking your face off the concrete when you fall out the window, you know.
I can tell you my forearms more could you want? Massive, thanks to my Xbox One. Thank you very much, guys.
Let's talk about... We've mentioned this a little bit every so often, and we also know that it's going to feature with the Thrustmaster wheel. We should talk about F1 2021. The trailer for which came out mid last week, Jordan?
Yeah, it was just after the other guys did the show. as it always Standard. Does. It mainly focused, the trailer mainly focused on the breaking point game mode that, as Ben and Lewis mentioned last week, it was leaked and therefore proven to be true. Mm. Sort of this more dramatic version of a career mode. And it's got everyone's favorite, AI, Devin Butler is back in it, you know. So it's sort of the way I'm seeing this is sort of the career mode, but with Drive to Survive kind of drama sort of thing in it. I'm not sure whether I'll like it, but I'm sure it'll be interesting. Basically everything that the guy spoke about last week that was leaked turned out to be true. So breaking point career mode, two-player career. One thing that I don't believe we had seen was the real season start, which basically is a game mode that allows you to jump into the championship reflecting on the live standings of the real series. So you can take over and drive the remaining races based on the championship order of the real championship, cool. Where it's at. I like that. That's quite cool. I guess it would only really work for the first couple of first few months of the game being released, obviously, because when the season's over, what does it do then? Does it then pick up the next season? As we've seen, they then the F1 games are quite reluctant to do like updating the current game with the next year's content. So,
it would
be interesting to see if real season start evolves into something else post season. But
well, more to the point, you wouldn't want to be that poor person who picks up the season at say just after the halfway point, jumps in. Oh, I don't know. I can't even say Ferrari because they're actually not doing too bad at the minute. Let's say
Aston Martin.
Let's say Aston Martin or Williams. And then having to somehow try and claw back the 40 points or so that you haven't got at the start of the year because your brakes are on fire before the grid.
Well, I wonder if real season start will replicate the fact that you might pick up the game in October, get to the Japanese Grand Prix, you're driving the Haas, and you're basically an F2 car. You know, I could see that being a double-edged sword. You're probably going to jump into the Mercedes or the Red Bull, to be honest.
It's a good idea. I don't know how you...
It's a really good idea. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, do you know if it's supporting VR this time?
I wanted to.
It's not listed, but I would imagine not. And I think we spoke about this on our show that wasn't a show last week of how much we would love VR integration in F1. That would be superb.
Because also the other thing that basically what ended up happening last week was Jordan and I had an hour long chat amongst ourselves. We were very polite and didn't swear not once. And,
I really hated
it. and nobody got to hear it. Yeah. No, but I remember us also saying that I couldn't understand how in the 21st century we've got a big budget game like this that doesn't have bloody mouse controls on the
ground. Oh, yeah. UI. Yeah.
How is that allowed?
Single most infuriating thing about the F1 games is the lack of mouse support.
I want to tell you, I uninstalled the game twice because I thought my mouse wasn't working and it was something that I had done.
It's a Codemasters thing because it was the same with Dirt Rally and that as well.
Mm.
So maybe with EA, maybe that'll change.
Point. Yeah,
I understand what that little arrow's for.
Yeah. Oh, that's what that is. and of course, the other thing that we didn't know before, which we know now, is when the game will be coming out, which will be on July the 16th, and that will be coming out on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X/S. PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC via Steam. The game will also be adding Portimao, Imola, and Jeddah. Let's face it, we only really care about the first two. As a post-launch update, sort of their way of getting around the turnaround they're going to have to do to try and get those circuits in, as it was a bit of a late confirmation. One thing I don't know whether... We mentioned it on ours. I don't know whether Ben mentioned it on their show that actually went out. There were the rumours of potential classic content expansion. So that there was the rumour of two classic tracks and some more cars from 2010 onwards. We haven't had any confirmation of that, but I would imagine we will probably hear more details about the game before its release in July.
Is Jeddah the track with like 60 corners?
It feels like that, yeah. I've driven it honestly. I've driven. There's a really good mod for it on Assetto Corsa.
Yeah, the really narrow street track.
Yeah, it's quite a fun track to drive. It's just a shame where it is, you know. So
I saw Jimmy Broadbent's video, and
it's a pretty good track. I don't know how current Formula One is going to race around there because it doesn't feel like there are very many overtaking opportunities, especially. As we know, for this current era of Formula One, are quite aerodynamically, sensitive. We'll go with that. I was thinking something much worse. So, yeah, I can't imagine. I don't know how good of an actual race it's going to be, but qualifying will be spectacular, and the sort of speeds around there are insane. Mm. So, yeah, it's a fun track to drive, though. I'm sure it will be fun in the game when it comes out.
Right, just very quickly before we move on to the esports roundup of the week.
Which we don't have too much of this week, which is strange.
Unusual, which is good because there's only 7 minutes of the show left somehow.
What?
I know. Angus/James, please don't, obviously. Have either of you ever played Test Drive Unlimited before?
No, never. I've heard it's fantastic. I've never given it a go though.
Same here.
Bodes well. Test Drive Unlimited Solar Crown released a cinematic trailer.
I've played it, so that's fine.
I've played it as well. I played the original one-to-one recreation of a Hawaiian island, which is utterly awesome. Thoroughly brilliant. The trailer tells you literally nothing about the game whatsoever, other than the fact that what looks like a DB10 is doing very fast things alongside some lady with very long nails in a Mansory-tuned Range Rover, by the looks of it.
It's the DB11, by the way.
DB11, sorry.
God. You're going to have the Aston Martin Owners Club writing in to complain now. So,
which is terrible, considering how much I like Aston Martins. It's coming in July 2021. That's basically all we know. And there appears to be... Now, I was under the impression that lots of keys in a bowl meant something else, but we're not going to go there. Because there's a picture of that in the trailer, as the picture of the two cars chasing each other, I'm assuming, to get to some sort of nail salon. And then there's some things that look like a casino-type thing going on. All very strange, doesn't tell you anything.
It's sort of carrying on. Yeah, that's the thing I was kind of hoping we would know from the trailer is where it will be, because they've said it will be another one-to-one recreation of an island.
Yeah.
We don't know where that will be. I think, you know, Guernsey? No.
Guernsey doesn't have any casinos.
Well, you never know. They might make one for this. I don't know.
Last time I checked, Monaco isn't an island, so...
Well, you know, if you're determined enough and you have a power saw, you know, you could make it an island. We don't actually know when the game is coming out. It said July 2021 at the end of the trailer, which I assumed was the release date, but apparently that's just when we're going to know more.
Oh.
Which is a really silly way of doing things. Because I was quite surprised when it said July 2021. I'm thinking, really? That soon? I was thinking we were going to have to wait much longer. But we are going to have to wait much longer. Yeah, we're making jokes about it, but I believe you and I are really quite excited for this game because, as you said, TDU 1 and 2 were fantastic, and a modern version.
All I will say is, Angus and James, if what you want to do is know what it's like to go and buy a pair of jeans and a Ferrari 458 in real time, this is the game for you.
Okay.
And of course, this is also the game that's also going to be using WRC's physics engine, I believe.
Okay.
Is that a good thing?
From the very little I've been able to play WRC 10, as for the technical issues that I've spoken about in last shows, that should be a good thing. It'll basically, like, it's Forza Horizon, but
okay, that's a less good thing.
But hopefully better.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. I would say that Forza Horizon was inspired by TDU. And TDU, the first one in Oahu, and the second one in Ibiza, were absolutely... I don't know why I'm saying it like that. Were absolutely brilliant. Phenomenal titles. And Horizon is a mere pretender.
I would agree.
Yeah. Blimmin' heck. 2 minutes, Jordan. Let's look at... I'm going to pick one of the esports roundup of the week and we'll talk about that one.
Speedrun, let's go.
All right. Let's do it. There's only one event that's actually happened. The other two we can't actually talk about
yet.
Fair enough,
do that then.
All right, so the first round of the Fanatec Esports GT Pro Series, which is the series which will pay points to the Fanatec GT World Challenge, powered by AWS, sponsored by PowerGen. I don't know how many sponsors they've got on there. They held their first... other electricity supplies are available. They held their first sim race on Tuesday, I believe it was, at Monza. And the way this basically works is the top three drivers from the Pro and Silver classes get 3, 2, and 1 points, respectively, which will count toward the real championship. Arthur Rougier won for the Pro class in the Emil Frey Racing Lamborghini. thus earning 3 points in the one-hour race, ahead of Daniel Yunkadea in the Mercedes and Nicholas Nielsen in the Iron Lynx Ferrari. And in the silver class, it was Ryuichiro Tomita in the Team WRT Audi, ahead of Ezekiel Kompank in the Mad Panda Mercedes, and Benjamin Heitz, in the Rinaldi Racing Ferrari. So those were your 6 point earners in this round. It's a shame we didn't get the chance to ask you guys about how you feel about the integration of sim racing into a real championship, but I guess that's just a reason we'll have to get you on in a future episode.
Oh, go on then.
Speedrun round, so I like it. Next.
Next, is a reminder to tune in a couple of hours' time for the second round of the IMSA iRacing Pro Series presented by SimCraft. They will be racing at the WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca tonight with live coverage, as usual, in sound and vision at imsaradio.com, courtesy of RSL. And finally, it's that awkward time of the week where the eNASCAR Pro Invitational Series technically happened yesterday, but because of the timing, we can't talk about it until next week. So, yeah, Ben and Lewis will be able to tell you what happened at Talladega. I'm sure it will be chaos, not just because it's eNASCAR racing at Talladega, but also Kevin Harvick's 8-year-old son, Keelan Harvick, will be racing. Yeah, an 8-year-old will be racing NASCAR Pro Invitational Series, and he will still probably do a better job than Clint Bowyer, because he is rather bad at iRacing. And that is your quick fire round of esports round of the week. I think he would admit it, to be honest. I think even Clint Bowyer would admit that he is terrible at iRacing. I'm sure he would. And as you said, if not, my Twitter is Lewis Satterley.
LS_racing.
Yeah, please DM me all your angry comments. That's definitely me. 100%.
Oh, you'll love to see it.
Gentlemen, that is the show. Thank you ever so much for joining us, Angus and James. Fantastic to have you guys on. Blimey, what a year it's been. Wishing you all the very best, both of you, for 2021, whatever that may bring you. Jordan, fingers crossed, I'll see you on the other side. Play us out, Johnny.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.